This is The Takeaway. I'm WNYC's Cindy Rodriguez, and today for Tanzina Vega, it's good to have you with us.
The yeas are 57. The nays are 43.
In the big news of the weekend, the Senate voted 57-43 to convict former President Donald Trump of inciting the insurrection on January 6th. However, due to the 67-vote threshold needed for conviction, Trump was acquitted, again, in his second impeachment trial. While the acquittal was seen as likely, seven Republicans broke with their party and voted to convict Trump for inciting the riot at the Capitol building. Even some GOP members who voted against conviction still excoriated the former president's behavior.
This was an intensifying crescendo of conspiracy theories orchestrated by an outgoing president who seemed determined to either overturn the voters' decision or else torch our institutions on the way out.
Later this hour, we'll look at some of the major challenges that lie ahead for the former president now that he's out of office. But we're going to start with another important story that hasn't gotten much attention. Attacks against the Asian American and Pacific Islander population are on the rise across the U.S. In recent weeks, there's been a surge in violent incidents in the Bay Area and beyond, specifically targeting Asian American elders. In San Francisco, an 84-year-old Thai man died after being shoved to the ground during a morning walk. And in nearby Oakland, a 91-year-old man was violently pushed to the ground, unprovoked, in the city's Chinatown. But the recent violence against the AAPI population isn't coming out of nowhere. Since the pandemic started, anti-Asian racism and violence have surged in the U.S., in part fueled by the racist and xenophobic rhetoric and policies that came out of the Trump White House. According to Stop AAPI Hate, an organization tracking racist incidents against Asian Americans, there have been more than 2,800 incidents of anti-Asian discrimination since March. That includes everything from physical violence and verbal harassment to bullying and vandalism. And although it's unclear whether the recent attacks were racially motivated, the pain and fear experienced by the AAPI population is clear. This surge in anti-Asian violence is where we start on The Takeaway today. With me to talk about this is Chris Kwok, a mediator based in New York City and co-executive editor of a new report, A Rising Tide of Hate and Violence Against Asian Americans in New York During COVID-19. Chris, welcome to the show.
Hi there.
And also with us is Russell Jung, a professor with the Asian American Studies Department at San Francisco State University and a co-founder of the group Stop AAPI Hate. Russell, it's good to have you with us.
Great to be here.
So, Russell, let's start with some of the recent incidents of anti-Asian violence. What's happening in the Bay Area and elsewhere in California?
Well, it's been horrific. You know, during Lunar New Year, the first thing you do is greet your seniors, your elders, and bow to them. And now, instead, what we're seeing are horrific attacks against our senior and elderly population. And there's been a spate of street violence and crime that, again, aren't necessarily racially motivated, but are just creating a fear and anxiety within the Asian American community.
And so you talk about motive. Has there been a motive identified in these attacks?
Not that we know of yet. But what we do know is that in the past year, anti-Asian racism and hate have surged, not only because of the fear of the pandemic, but because of the racist political rhetoric that just has incited hate speech and then hate violence.
And so, Russell, you talked about the Lunar New Year. So this is a chance for many Asian families to gather together. How are the communities responding to these attacks right now?
I think our community has really stood up against the racism and the violence directed towards us. In the Bay Area, over 50 community groups have held rallies the past weekend for to show support of our elders and to heal our communities, to build racial solidarity. So, and across the nation, I've seen celebrities and athletes, high school students, people from all walks of life really rallying to and mobilizing to stop the racism.
And Chris, these kinds of anti-Asian attacks aren't just happening in California, but they're happening across the U.S. So you recently authored a report that was looking at this trend in New York City. Can you tell us a little bit about what you found?
What we found in 2020 was a ninefold increase in anti-Asian attacks in New York City. And these are just statistics that the NYPD has collected. So we think it's just the tip of the iceberg and that they were actually much more in 2020. And, you know, this concerned us because we are not aware of any prosecutions on the criminal side, nor any resolutions on the civil side of any of these incidents. So we're worried as to where it's leading in New York City as well.
And so can you tell us how this racism manifests itself besides the very violent assaults? What else is the AAPI population experiencing?
It ranges, and it's directed towards like mothers playing with their children at the playground, where other mothers would say, you know, hey, you know, don't play with that Asian, you know, kid, because they're the ones that brought Corona here. So it really runs the gamut, and it's a chilling sort of effect on Asian Americans as they go about their daily lives.
And Russell, is that a similar experience in California for the Asian community?
Yeah, it's clear. People are targeting our what they perceive are vulnerable populations. Women are harassed 2.4 times more than men. Youth and elderly are disproportionately represented in our reports.
And what is this doing to people's mental health, Russell?
Oh, it's had a severe impact. Not only are Asian Americans concerned about getting COVID, they're concerned about their elderly parents, and we live in more multi-generational households than the rest of the nation. We're concerned about our livelihood, and then the racism compounds the stress and anxiety. So Asian Americans are the racial group experiencing the most depression, anxiety, and from the racism, racial trauma during COVID-19.
And so, Russell, there has been some arrests in California, at least one arrest. Is that person being charged with a hate crime?
No, not necessarily. Hate crimes, again, are incidents where you can be arrested and where there's racial bias that's been demonstrated. And again, these incidents seemingly are unprovoked and there aren't witnesses to hear what the person said, so you can't tell if it was racially motivated or not. We do know in our incidents that have been reported, about one-third include racist statements when the perpetrators say things like, go back home, you effing chink, or it's because of you and your people we have the coronavirus. So people are using racist language and racial slurs to attack us.
And Chris, how is the NYPD responding?
Well, they created an anti-Asian task force, and, you know, we applaud them for that. And, you know, our recommendation was that they go further along. They made it permanent recently, but we think that, you know, right now it's a volunteer task force, which means that the detectives are serving full time on another role and then take this on a volunteer basis. We think it should be a full-time assignment and the commander be given a budget and have this, you know, sort of exist until there's no need for it.
And Chris, do you believe that a lot of these incidents are going unreported?
Absolutely. You know, there's a big language disconnect between the police and Asian American populations, particularly ones who don't speak English well. And, you know, there is, I think, a general feeling that if you report it, it's not going to go anywhere. It's going to be extremely time consuming. So we have specific recommendations that we think might make it easier, you know, for these reports to be taken seriously.
And Russell, are racist crimes against the AAPI population historically underreported?
Yeah, they've been historically underreported for the same reasons Chris mentioned, language access, thinking it's not going to do any good. It's clear that we're receiving much more reports than the police are. including physical assaults. So people are reporting to us because we have 12 different languages, we're a trusted community partner, and because people feel like they don't necessarily want to criminalize people, but our people, our respondents want a collective voice just to stop it from happening to others.
And for either of you, what's the media coverage been like? Have these attacks been getting much attention from mainstream media?
I mean, I think that they have been covered, particularly in the beginning, which was like in March of 2020, and then it petered out during BLM. And then I think that social media, you know, in the recent sort of death of the Thai American, you know, social media really, I think, began to ring the bell. And then I think it's made its way into sort of mass media. So I think that, you know, that the social media and Asian Americans on Facebook and Twitter have really sort of remade it an issue during this, I think, second wave.
Right. There's been some celebrities who have stepped in and tried to highlight these incidents. Russell, do you want to talk about that?
Yeah, even though, you know, these thousands of cases are really horrific and traumatizing, I've been actually heartened to see the Asian American community stand up and mobilize at this moment. So we're seeing people from all walks of life, celebrities, athletes, but also, you know, high school students, data scientists, working with Stop AAPI Hate to address this racism and to call for racial solidarity at this moment.
Right. Wasn't there an Asian American graphic designer who created sort of a portrait of one of the men who died?
Right. That's one of the images that have gone viral. And like Chris said, Asian Americans are using the platforms that they have, social media, alternative media, to get the word out, to stand up, and to mobilize our communities. It's been an amazing movement, actually, from the Asian American perspective.
Right, right. You know, early on in the pandemic, there was some reporting about the financial toll on Chinatowns across the U.S. We've got about a minute before we need to take a break. But Chris, do you want to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, you know, before the shutdown in March of 2020, the financial, you know, hit was felt by Chinese restaurants because people felt if you could avoid Chinatown, you could avoid Chinese restaurants, you avoided COVID-19. In New York City. And so Chinese restaurants began to experience a dramatic decrease in business early on. And after the pandemic hit and the PPP loans came, they had enormous difficulty in accessing federal loans. And in New York City, there's been difficulty in accessing emergency loans. So it's a real crisis in Chinatown.
Russell, are businesses in California also experiencing this?
We've seen in news media accounts that Chinatowns globally have been down 50 to 75%. Like Chris said, people were shunning and avoiding Chinatowns before shelter in place occurred. And so our Asian businesses have shut down sooner than other businesses. And we have really high rates of joblessness within the Asian American community. It's going to be really difficult to recover after the pandemic.
Right. So during the pandemic, we haven't just seen racism at the individual level, but there's also in terms of actual policy. So can you remind us what we saw under the Trump administration last year, Russell?
Yeah, beyond the interpersonal violence that we experienced, the political rhetoric translated into interpersonal violence and also racist policies. The Trump administration actually stopped migration. And so that stops families from reuniting. He banned Chinese scientists and researchers. He banned WeChat, the major Chinese online platform. He banned racial sensitivity trainings in the federal government. So a lot of my talks were canceled just because I talked about race. He cut refugee resettlement. He cut H-1B visas. So all these policies had a disproportionate impact on the Asian American community, our ability to see our families, our ability to communicate with our families, and our ability to do business. They were actual infringement of our constitutional rights.
And so, Chris, have you seen any difference since Joe Biden took over as president?
I think I've felt the difference. You know, political leadership, it's so important. And I think people, you know, maybe that didn't understand it before, now understand what it is when President Biden, you know, signed that executive order on January 26th of this year. I mean, it was symbolic, but symbols matter in politics. And I think Asian Americans across the country, you know, breathed a sigh of relief, you know, through the executive action, was said, we won't use no more racist language. Let's not call it a Chinese flu. And if there's anything, we should draw it back a little bit. And people felt the difference. I know I did.
Right, right. And so moving forward, what else do you want to see from the federal government?
I mean, I think the federal government needs to be really engaged in the leadership position from this. You know, the state and city governments are a lot closer to sort of everyday life. But the federal response with political leadership from Kamala Harris, Biden, signaling sort of what they have and then putting that into action through the federal government sort of bureaucracy, leading talks, making sure that crimes are being, hate crimes are being prosecuted, that there's also a civil resolution component through mediation of these things. It can play a really effective leadership role here.
And so, Russell, in California, does the Asian community want perpetrators to be charged with hate crimes?
There's a range of responses. What Stop AAPI Hate is calling for is more restorative justice. Like Chris mentioned, we're working with the Department of Fair Employment and Housing to promote mediation and to expand our civil rights protections. Again, most of our incidents that we're experiencing aren't necessarily hate crimes, but hate incidents where we're getting verbally harassed, where we're getting barred from establishments. And so what we want are expanded protections and safe access to goods and services. We want public accommodations. So again, Stop AAPI Hate, we're working with the DFEH to encourage people to pursue that remedy. We're holding a seminar in multiple languages to encourage people to fight for their rights. And we think that's probably a better way to address a lot of these issues.
So you mentioned mediation. Can you talk about that a little bit? How do you envision that?
Well, Chris is a mediator, so we learn a lot from him. But for example, if customers are harassing one another, an Asian American can complain to a corporation, file a complaint about the corporation's lack of protection, and the corporation could put up better signage, could train its employees, can work out, could provide financial restitution to a targeted Asian American. So that type of mediation, again, doesn't necessarily criminalize the racist person, but it works to hold that individual accountable, hold the corporations accountable, but also provides healing and reconciliation for the targeted person.
And so, Chris, Russell's right. You're the mediator. Do you want to tackle that question as well?
Yeah. You know, like during the 60s, the Department of Justice, you know, created something called the Community Relations Service. And not a lot of people know about it, but it's a great, it's a community mediation service where mediators come into communities that are, you know, in the middle of a conflict and sit down with groups and try to find some way out of that sort of, you know, conflict point. And that's one of the, you know, wonderful things that the federal government can put into action. It was really, it suffered a lot during the Trump administration in terms of funding, things like that. But it can really be put to good use. It's already there.
Well, gentlemen, thank you so much for joining us. Russell Jung is a professor of the Asian American Studies Department at San Francisco State University and co-founder of Stop AAPI Hate. And Chris Kwok is a mediator based in New York City and co-executive editor of a new report, A Rising Tide of Hate and Violence Against Asian Americans in New York During COVID-19. Thank you both for coming on the show today.
Thank you. Thank you.